All right, for this hour, if you're trying to get your kids involved in classical music, there are limited options. You can play the best and hope they like it. You can play Symphony for the Devil and Sympathy for the Devil over and over and over and hope it seeps in. Or you could just search Looney Tunes and leave the heavy lifting to Bugs Bunny. The Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra will be in Chicago this Saturday for two shows, performing Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition. The concert project projects iconic Looney Tunes cartoons on the big screen, while the orchestra plays the scores of Carl Stalling and Milt Franklin live. These are the scores that introduced several generations of classical music. In studio with me tonight is the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra conductor, George Doherty. George, great to meet you and have you in studio. Thanks for being here. I appreciate
it. It's great to be here. Thrilling to be back in Chicago.
What is it? Yeah, you're a Chicago guy. What's it mean to bring the symphony back here?
Well, you know, the concert actually travels all over the country, all over the world. So we don't always have the Warner Brothers Symphony, because just last week we were with the Boston Pops. Right before that, the New York Philharmonic, the Philadelphia Orchestra. So this concert has been going for 30 years now, which is incredible, three decades. And we've played with over 250 orchestras.
Wow.
In the world, in front of over 3 million people.
So what are we going to see at Symphony Center on
Saturday? So at Symphony Center, because the CSO is in Europe on tour, we have brought in a fabulous orchestra made out of the greatest freelance Chicago musicians that there are, which we are lovingly calling the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra. And the audience will see 16 unbelievably iconic Looney Tunes on the big screen, while all of these incredible Carl Stalling and Milt Franklin scores are played live by 70 musicians. And it is an out-of-body experience for everybody, because, you know, we all grew up, no matter what age we are, we all grew up listening to these cartoons as kids. And
absolutely.
And as you said, it was we were getting a master class in classical music and we didn't even know it was happening, which is the best way of imparting, you know, classical music to young kids, is not letting them know that it's, you know, too many people, it's like, I'm going to take you to something that you're probably not going to like,
right,
but you're going to go. But, you know, but this just imparted it in a way that was seamlessly, absolutely fantastic.
It also brings us back to a moment in time where you did have symphonies and orchestras and others doing the music for popular material.
Well, and when these cartoons were made, I mean, we have some new things. So I can tell you about that later, because 2020 is also Bugs Bunny's 80th birthday. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And we have three brand new Looney Tunes in the concert and some other new cartoons. But the classics, like What's Opera Doc, The Rabbit of Seville, Baton Bunny, Corny Concerto, all of those, they were made in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. And during this time, you know, there was tons of classical music on the Ed Sullivan Show, you know, Beverly Sills was co-hosting the Johnny Carson Show sometimes. So classical music was more part of the popular vernacular for everybody, not just adults, but also for kids. This concert plays perfectly no matter what age you are. And the great directors who made them, Chuck Jones, Fritz Freleng, Tex Avery, Bob Clampett, they made them for everybody, because these were made actually pre-television. They weren't made for television. Television was a byproduct for these cartoons. These cartoons were made to be seen in the movie theaters.
Oh, right.
In 1930s, 1940s, 1950s.
So you needed that big sound.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And they used the full Warner Brothers Orchestra. So the way that we can take this to the Philadelphia Orchestra, the New York Philharmonic, you know, here in Chicago, is because these cartoon scores were originally played by 80 or 90 musicians. But they're full of Wagner and Tchaikovsky, Rossini, Franz Liszt, Smetana, von Suppé, Donizetti, Ponchielli. I mean, the list goes on. Johann Strauss appears over and over again. But Carl Stalling and Milt Franklin, their own compositional abilities were absolutely phenomenal. And so they put their own spin on these things. But yet the musicians are in their element. I was talking to our incredible concertmaster tonight, Florentino Ramnicianu, who is a legendarily fantastic Chicago violinist, and she's our concertmaster here for this. And she said, "Oh my God, this is so hard! I forgot how hard this is."
I was going to ask you, because when we think of Bugs Bunny, you would automatically think that everybody knows that music, so therefore it's mainstream, and therefore you develop a theory to say, well, maybe it's not as difficult as some of the scores that were created traditionally just for orchestras. Is that the case? Is this difficult music?
This concert is like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring on steroids. It never stops. It never slows down. Each cartoon was exactly 6 minutes and 40 seconds long. That was the length that had to be back in the old days to play in the movie theaters, because you had the coming attractions, the newsreel, you had the live action short subject, you had the cartoon. The cartoon had to be one reel exactly. That was 6 minutes, 40 seconds. And so they're all the same exact length. But the amount of music and notes that are put into that 6 minutes and 40 seconds. I mean, one of the most classic Carl Stalling moments is this cartoon called Zoom and Board that we do, which is a Roadrunner and Coyote cartoon. And, I mean, the amount of notes is just staggering. It just never stops. And so we actually have to put in like interstitials of just like 2 minutes here and there, so the musicians can actually have
take a breath.
We'll have the feeling come back to their hands. The trumpet players,
quick water here.
Yeah, their lips stop bleeding, because it's just nonstop. And you know, in a normal symphony concert, you have a very vigorous first movement, then you have an andante, then you have a scherzo or a waltz or whatever, and then you have a big conclusion, so the musicians get to take a breath in the middle of it all, but
not for this, right?
There's no breath in Looney Tunes.
George Doherty is my guest. He is the conductor for the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra, which will be on stage at Symphony Center coming up on Saturday for two shows for the Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition. We're talking about it tonight. So it'll be at 3:00 and 7:30 at Symphony Center on Saturday. Let's take a break, George, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation about Bugs Bunny and classical music here on 720 WGN. There you go, a little music.
That was the aforementioned Zoom and Board. That's actually probably the quietest, slowest moment in all of Zoom and Board.
Good for the radio. George Doherty is in studio with me tonight. He's a conductor of the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra, and we're talking about the show Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition, which will be at Symphony Center on Michigan Avenue. This Saturday, shows at 3 and 7:30 p.m. And it's really talking about classical music and the connection with Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes. George, how did you get involved with this? What about Bugs Bunny drew you? What about this whole project drew you to it?
Well, you know, I frequently get depicted as a lifelong Looney Tunes crazed addict, which is kind of true in my second half of my life. But actually, I was a normal musician for quite a while. Actually, I loved Looney Tunes as a kid. I sat on the living room floor and watched them every Saturday morning as a 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old. I was totally captivated by the music. And back in those days, in the 1960s, when you turned on the television, the sound came on immediately and the picture didn't come up for about 2 minutes. And it was black and white. But I could find the Looney Tunes just by the sound of their orchestrations and instrumentation, because they are so distinctive to this day. And I love the music. And then I was studying piano. I was studying cello. I became a conductor. I forgot about Looney Tunes for about 20 years, and I was actually living here in Chicago. I lived here in Chicago for 8 years, which is why it is so fantastic to be back here. I've already made my pilgrimage back to the Wiener Circle on Clark Street today, I was working, I was music director for the ballet company that was here in Chicago at that time. It was called the Chicago City Ballet. Then it became Ballet Chicago. And I was also working on an animation project and with some fantastic animators called Calabash Animation. They were on LaSalle Street back then. And one night when we were working on this crazy, very surreal project, you have to remember that in 1988, nobody had digital devices. We weren't certainly getting up on Saturday morning to watch Looney Tunes because I was conducting Swan Lake on Friday night. But suddenly there was this thing called VHS videos that were out, and all these cartoons were suddenly back out into the popular vernacular. And one night after working hard, we were like slugging down a large amount of alcohol and a large amount of Chicago pizza.
As conductors are known to do.
And animators.
And animators.
I was only doing it because there were animators there. Conductors, we don't really do that all the time. But anyway, they brought out What's Opera Doc, The Rabbit of Seville. I saw this and I said, these are as brilliant as I remember. And, you know, that's a wonderful moment because so many of the things that you think are brilliant as a kid, when you rediscover them when you're, you know, 28 or 30 or 35 years old, suddenly you realize they weren't so brilliant. These were even more brilliant than I remembered. So to really make a long story short, I really wanted to do these as an orchestral concert because at this point, I was looking for ways to create concerts that would bring people into the concert hall, that whole families could come and be exposed to classical music. And adults who never come to the concert hall. I mean, our concert pulls in 70% adults who have never stepped foot into a concert hall before. So I decided, let's put a concert together. And then I quickly realized that we had to show the cartoons because the music without seeing the cartoons was only half the story of the amazing artistic brilliance of these Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies. And in 1988, 89, that wasn't so easy to do, to figure out how to do this
and project it in a stadium
and in a live setting and have the orchestra play in sync and have the sound effects, because the sound effects and dialogue are all live from the original cartoon. And the music is, you know, played by the live orchestra. It's like trying to run in front of a freight train for 2 hours and 15 minutes. But we have to be totally in sync because when the coyote gets clonked on the head by the big boulder that the roadrunner has just pushed off the precipice, there is a huge sound effect and there's a huge musical accent. Those two things have to be together. And if they aren't together, the entire audience knows
they know,
they're not
right,
together.
Yeah. Right.
So we have a 24th of a second, one frame of film, 24th of a second to be in sync with the picture and the sound.
Because I would say as an orchestra, just like you said, how fast this music was and how it's much different than if you're going to an orchestra show and some of the musicians get to slow down.
When you're playing a Tchaikovsky symphony and the slow movement and if the oboist is having an unbelievably fantastic night and it's more gorgeous and lyrical than it was the night before, you can take more time, you can really...
But you can't do that here because
the cartoons will leave us behind.
You've got to stay with the cartoons.
Yeah, the cartoons will totally leave us
in the dust. Are musicians trained for that? Can they keep up with that? Because that's a hard thing, because you're right, it is a lot about feel. In this case, it has to be technical. You have to be at the exact same
time.
Well,
we have a click track which helps keep us on course. They have to follow me. I'm really on course. I'm still like the pilot of the plane, and the click track is like the GPS, which is kind of helping us out. Initially, it was tough when we started 30 years ago because orchestras were not doing these kind of concerts. We were actually the very first film and orchestra, you know, film with live orchestra concert touring in the whole country. And so the normal orchestras when you got to New York or Chicago at that time, Chicago had a huge recording scene for films and commercials back then. So Chicago musicians knew how to do click track. And so in Chicago, in New York, in L.A., the musicians knew exactly what to do. Everywhere else in the world, it was like scary in the beginning because there could be train wrecks. We actually put an orchestra together here in Chicago. There was an amazing recording studio here called Universal Recording on either Oak Street or up now near where like the Four Seasons and Bloomingdale's is. And it had one of the best large orchestra rooms in the whole country. Sadly, it has been torn down and there is a condominium building there now.
Right, right.
But we put an entire orchestra together to show Warner Brothers what these cartoons would sound like with a huge orchestra in today's world. Because when these cartoons were recorded in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they were recorded on single stripe mag film strip. Mono, dead sonically, not even stereo. They have a fantastic, you know, vintage sound, but they're not dynamic at all. So we recorded a couple of the cartoons, re-recorded them with a full symphony orchestra, how you would actually hear it in the concert hall. We did that right here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I literally went to O'Hare with a desktop computer with it all on it because nobody had laptops back then.
Just carrying it through the terminal.
with gigantic box and the huge monitor. And we pitched it to Warner Brothers. And amazingly, they said, yes, let's do this. It's amazing.
It's an amazing story, and I want to talk more about it. George Doherty is here, and he is the conductor for the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra, which is on stage at the Symphony Orchestra at Symphony Hall here in Chicago on Saturday for two shows, 3 o'clock and 7:30, Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition. To say that Looney Tunes Merry Melodies was not the only product that was being put out by Hollywood at the time that had classical music attached. So what makes these more special than the other cartoons and the other shows that were using classical music? Because that was the music of the time.
Well, there are a couple things that make them really special. One thing that makes them special is that for the animated short, the 6 minute and 40 second animated mm-hmm. short that a lot of studios were doing back mm-hmm. then, MGM was doing Tom and Jerry, you know, Disney was doing the Mickey Mouse right. Silly Symphonies,
right. Yeah.
But at Warner Brothers they used the full gigantic 80 to 100 piece Warner Brothers Symphony for the animated shorts. That didn't really happen anywhere else, or if it happened, it was really rare. At Warner Brothers, it happened for every single one of almost 1,000 shorts.
Wow.
But the real reason that they are so special is because of the brilliance of Carl Stalling, especially. Carl Stalling invented animation scoring. Carl Stalling was born in Missouri, right across the state line from Illinois, Lexington, Missouri. In the 1920s, as a 12-year-old, he was playing the piano in the silent movie theater in his hometown.
Wow.
And then he went to Kansas City and St. Louis, and he met Walt Disney. And Walt Disney was carrying around some old bedraggled drawings of a mouse that he thought would make a great animation character, because there was this new thing called animation in 1939. I mean, this was like a new art form. Nobody was doing it yet. And so Carl Stalling went with Walt Disney to L.A. and did a few of the early Silly Symphonies. But then he hopped over to Warner Brothers, because here's what was happening at Warner Brothers. Jack and Harry and the other Warner Bros. Owned the largest music publishing empire in the world at that time. It was like what the Michael Jackson estate owned at the time of Michael Jackson's death now, or you know, it was gigantic. Their whole idea for the Merry Melodies and the Looney Tunes was to get their popular music out there, because people were buying sheet music back then. And so the proviso was put a lot of popular music into it. Well, Carl Stalling completely ignored that. So there's some popular music here and there, and some have more than others. But what he really loved was classical music, because he was an impeccably trained classical musician. So he started putting in Wagner and Tchaikovsky and Rossini and all of that. And it just grew and grew and grew and grew until you end up with What's Opera Doc, which is sort of the masterpiece in our show.
Let's do this. I want to take a quick break, and I want to come back, and we'll pick right up with What's Opera Doc. George Doherty is my guest. He is the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra conductor. The Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition, will be at Symphony Hall on the Symphony Center. I keep saying Symphony Hall, but it's Symphony Center now. January 18th, which is this Saturday, 3 and 7:30 p.m., two shows. We'll take a quick break, come back here with George Doherty on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Kill the rabbit. Almighty
warrior of great fighting stock. Might I inquire to ask if... What's up, Doc?
I'm going to kill the rabbit.
Almighty Hunt, that will be quite a task. How will you do it? Might I inquire to ask?
I will do it with my spear and magic helmet.
Your spear and magic helmet?
Spear and magic helmet.
Magic helmet.
Magic helmet. Yes, magic helmet, and I'll give you a sample.
Some music there from Bugs Bunny, of course, and Bugs Bunny is what we're talking about tonight with the conductor of the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra, which will be on stage at Symphony Center on Saturday for two shows at 3 and 7:30 p.m. George Doherty is here, and even that, I mean, that's an amazing episode, and it's one that I think everybody knows.
Well, yeah. Well, and before I need to give credit where credit is due also, that recording, we've made two recordings of this show now. We made a recording in 1990 of our Broadway, because this thing whole originated on Broadway when we got started. We were at the Gershwin Theater, which is where Wicked has been for a million years.
That's
but
great, yeah.
That's where it all, so we did a recording then, but this recording that we're playing tonight, we recorded at the Sydney Opera House. That's with the Sydney Symphony. So that shows you how mainstream into the culture. I mean, we've done this at the Sydney Opera House, at the Royal Festival Hall, at, you know, the Hollywood Bowl. We've done it 22 times at the Hollywood Bowl. We'll be back there this summer for our 23rd time on Bugs Bunny's actual 80th birthday. So that's, and if you walked out on the street anywhere in Chicago, in New York, in LA, in San Francisco, in London, and you went bum ba ba bum 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 ba ba bum bum. Tell me right now what came into your mind? What came into your mind right now?
Kill the Wabbit.
Yeah. 90% of them would say Kill the Wabbit before they would say Wagner, The Ring of the Nibelungen, Die Walküre.
I wish I was more sophisticated to say Wagner. I said Kill the Wabbit instead.
The Jerry Seinfeld episode, yeah, right. Where they're standing out in front of the opera and he does it and Elaine says, Jerry, it's really sad, everything you've learned about classical music you've learned from Bugs Bunny.
It's
seeped it. But What's Opera Doc is a masterpiece. Okay, so the director was the great Chuck Jones, and Chuck Jones as a director did most of these classical music masterpieces that we do in our concert. We got to know him very well. He actually came with us to Orchestra Hall, as it was called back in the early 90s, and now it's Symphony Center, and appeared on stage with us while he was still living. He loved to come to this concert. Chuck knew a lot about classical music. He was a connoisseur of classical music. Carl Stalling and Milt Franklin knew a lot about classical music. Now, we have to give credit to Milt Franklin here, because Milt Franklin actually did the score for What's Opera Doc, because Carl Stalling had retired by then. And Chuck Jones gave me this thing that is so valuable and so amazing. On animation paper, he wrote all the Wagnerian music he wanted in animation pencil, and that is exactly how it appears in the cartoon. But this is where the real masterpiece of what Milt Franklin did is. There are serious excerpts from all four Ring Cycle operas. So that's Die Walküre, Siegfried, Das Rheingold, and Götterdämmerung. Then there are, so that alone is 30 hours of opera. Mm-hmm. And then there are huge segments from Tannhäuser, The Flying Dutchman, Rienzi, and Lohengrin. Eight Wagnerian operas that we pay serious homage to in 6 minutes and 40 seconds.
Well, all of that stuff. Like, that's probably my weak spot. Opera is my weak spot. I don't know anything. I don't know any of the most popular operas down to the best and all that.
Yeah.
But there's something about Bugs Bunny and the Looney Tunes cartoons that introduced us to all this music. And the question I have for you is, and I think about it now, John Williams and all of the stuff they did for Star Wars,
right,
and all that kind of stuff has also done that. But do you see that to be the right way to introduce audiences to classical music, to opera, through some of these big primetime mainstream entertainment?
It's a fabulous way. And you know what? There is no right way and no wrong way. When people live in a city like Chicago or New York or any place that has a major symphony orchestra, there are opportunities for kids to go to see special symphony orchestra concerts for kids. And that is a fantastic way. And we don't replace that in any way. But there are a whole lot of people who aren't going to either have access to that or who aren't going to take their kids to a serious symphony orchestra concert. And so that's where the exposure is for kids these
days.
And you're seeing
a lot of these shows with the cartoon or with the
with
Star
the film,
Wars,
right,
or with the film.
Right. I mean, John Williams is an incredibly operatic composer, even though he doesn't write for the human voice. I mean, Star Wars, all of the ba-ba-dee-dee-da-dun-da-da-dee. I'm a terrible singer, but I mean, that's like an aria. And, you know, we all heard that when we were, well, I was 20-something when Star Wars came out. But, I mean, that went straight to my heart the first time I heard it. It was like hearing an opera aria by Verdi or Puccini. So, you know, the film concert has some people, like, get kind of gripey about the fact that there are so many live orchestra and film concerts these days. But it opens classical music and the magnificence of the live symphony orchestra to people who otherwise would never experience it. And so it's just another fantastic way of doing that. And you know, back in when they did these Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies, they were sort of poking fun in some ways at the pompous. And we have another cartoon in this show that is actually a premiere here in Chicago. It's called Long Haired Hair, where Giovanni Jones, the big pompous baritone, who is really irritated because he's trying to practice and Bugs is playing the banjo right outside his house. And so Bugs eventually takes him down at the Hollywood Bowl. The Hollywood Bowl appears in 5 of the cartoons we show. And so every time we're at the Hollywood Bowl, every time the bowl appears on screen, the 18,000 people at the Hollywood Bowl scream and yell and take a shot. So
a drinking game,
because we've been there 22 times. Yeah, but anyway, they started out a little bit poking fun but the music is taken so seriously in these cartoons, which is why the musicians revel in this. I mean, my gosh, we're touring with the Philadelphia Orchestra next summer, which is up. I mean, you know, you ask someone what's the greatest orchestra in America, and they'll either say the Chicago Symphony or the Philadelphia Orchestra or several other orchestras, and I could be politically correct and go through them all. But
you're just doing whatever town you're in. I get it.
No, that's not true. But Philadelphia, they call it the Fabulous Philadelphians. Right. We're going on tour with them.
That's awesome.
To 3 cities. I mean, so I remember serious music.
I remember as a kid part of the, I guess it was the music class or whatever it was at Harrison School in Wonder Lake. The music teacher would show us Peter and the Wolf.
Yep.
And Peter and the Wolf's whole concept was to show the duck was the
oboe.
The oboe. You know exactly.
The bird was
of course,
the flute.
You're right.
The wolf was the French horns.
Is that still happening in schools? Because I want to know if that in music class and other places is happening where there is this way that you can introduce,
well,
like we're doing with Bugs Bunny, introduce new concepts to kids through things like Peter and the Wolf.
Here's the sad thing about that is that, and I mean, Chicago still has a really vigorous arts program in the schools, and so does like San Francisco, where I live now. It has, you know, a lot of cities do, but a lot of cities now don't, and a lot of cities have cut music and art out of the core curriculum of their schools. So, I mean, my nephew who lives in another city, in order to be in the school orchestra, he has to give up his lunch hour because it's no longer a class. You know, I mean, kids have to make sacrifices like that in some cities in order to participate in the arts, which is just really sad. So concerts like ours and the other, you know, film and orchestra concerts and any symphony orchestra concert, take up the slack because that's a place where kids can still learn and be exposed to classical music. Peter and the Wolf is still the original way of teaching kids about music and the way it relates to storytelling. And as we were chatting before the interview, you know, we have some experience with Peter and the Wolf because my producing partner husband David Wong and I produced a really cool production of Peter and the Wolf.
How cool is that?
Well, that's, it was so wonderful. Great. But and we actually won an Emmy Award for it, which was even cooler. But we owe all of that to Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, and Chuck Jones because our Peter and the Wolf has characters designed by the great Chuck Jones, the great director of, and we got to know him so well through the Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, and our original name was Bugs Bunny on Broadway before we became Bugs Bunny at the Symphony. And David and I were having, David Wong and I were having lunch with Chuck one Sunday afternoon at his house in Newport Beach, and And he was almost 90 years old at this point, and he opened up a drawer and pulled out all these unbelievable drawings of these characters from Peter and the Wolf that he'd done like 20, 30 years earlier. And he said, you know, he talked like this. He said, you know, I'm not going to have time to do this. You know, I'm almost 90 years old, but I want to see this made. And he just handed them to us. This is like, I mean, Chuck Jones is the Da Vinci, the Rembrandt, the Monet, the Van Gogh, of animation. This is like Monet handing you a painting.
I'm not going to use this. You can use this.
Take it home. Put it on your wall. So we made this version of Peter the Wolf with Chuck's characters. And it's very funny because, and it was on ABC television network. And, Kirstie Alley was the narrator and played the mom. Ross Malinger, the kid from Sleepless in Seattle, who is now like 30 years old, was the little boy. He's Peter. And the great Lloyd Bridges was grandfather. And, so it was an incredible, but if you look at our characters, you will see that Wile E. Coyote definitely developed a cousin in our Peter and the Wolf. The wolf actually looks like Wile E. And great. The duck is definitely a second cousin of Daffy. So
well, back to schools and music. And this is, I think that hearing the story of your nephew and the idea of having to take lunch to do this kind of thing, it's not as, and maybe that's just generations and we're moving away from it. But it's not as required as it used to be. When I was a kid of the 80s, and I had to play clarinet.
Right.
I had to go into the band, and I had to be a part of the concert, even though I reluctantly wanted to do it. It was something I had to do.
Right.
I don't see that as much in American culture right now, that you have to be a part of a... You have to learn how a clarinet works with a cello and works with a trumpet.
No, it's...
It's not something that's really part of our vernacular.
It's not part of our vernacular, and it's disappearing. And that's why we have to keep it moving. And to me, I'm a huge fighter for including it back in school curriculums and making sure that kids have the opportunity. They shouldn't have to give up their lunch hour. They shouldn't have to sacrifice. They shouldn't have to, I mean, yeah, we all had to practice after school. We all had to practice our instruments. We all had to do all of that. But they shouldn't go hungry because they decide that they want to play violin in the school orchestra or play clarinet in the school band. You know, when we were kids, well, I'm old enough to be your father, at least. But, in the second grade, you learned, you had rhythm band. And in the third grade, you had the flutophone, which was like a recorder kind of thing. And everybody did it. And you had music class. And whether you wanted to or not, you became an active participant. And then you went on, and either you got good or you didn't, or you practiced or you didn't, or you joined the football team or the basketball team, or you did other things. But you had the opportunity for exposure. Exposure is the way it starts. And when any kid hears a live symphony orchestra playing, that is step number one. But any adult who hasn't been exposed to it too, when they hear a live symphony orchestra playing. So that's why Chicago is a great city with Millennium Park right here, mm-hmm. with Symphony Hall.
You can check it out any summer.
The Lyric Opera. Festival, yeah. I mean, any great big city with their opportunities. Unfortunately, there are other places where there aren't the same amount of opportunity. So, multimedia and social media and is a great way of still getting this stuff out here. That's why I never mind. There's all kinds of things about artists going crazy because someone takes a YouTube video of them while they're playing a concert and they stop the concert and scream at them from the stage. And there was a very famous violinist who did that not too long ago. To me, the more the merrier. If you can go on YouTube and look at classical music, look at great, because that's where kids are going to find it these days.
Yeah.
They're not going to go on an orchestra's website unless they're directed there. And a lot of orchestras have great websites for kids, but a lot of them don't. So, YouTube, great. The more the merrier. I want to see those cameras going, even though they're not allowed at Symphony Center.
Be careful what you wish for.
Well, I mean, people say to me, like, do you get crazy when a cell phone goes off in the middle of this concert? And I said, are you kidding? I can't hear a cell phone. There's so many Acme TNT explosions that are coming from the Coyote and the Roadrunner that I couldn't hear a cell phone if it was right there's behind
so,
me.
I mean, you can't go to a concert in any genre of music now without people pulling out their phone and deciding that's what they're going to do for the entire show. Whether that's good or bad is another conversation.
And we'll have that another time.
Yeah, George Doherty is here. He is the conductor for the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra. The show is called Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition. It'll be on stage at the Symphony Center right here on Michigan Avenue, coming up two concerts on Saturday at 3 o'clock and 7:30. George Doherty with me tonight. You know, as we wrap up, Bugs Bunny, 80th birthday. It's amazing to see how much this character has persevered. And we're talking about the music and everything about everything around Bugs Bunny. How important has the music been to who we know Bugs Bunny to be today?
Well, let's start with one really important fact. They're called Looney Tunes, T-U-N-E-S, not T-O-O-N-S, and Merry Melodies. Music was the foundation from the beginning. Warner Brothers is doing something really amazing. For Bugs' 80th birthday, Warner Brothers is doing 1,000 minutes of new Looney Tunes. And we have the first two of them that have been produced in this concert. The people could Dynamite Dance, which is the dance of the hours from Ponchielli's La Gioconda, and a fabulous cartoon with Porky and Daffy called Wet Cement. They're brand new. But what they've done is they've gone back to the original artistic designs of the characters. So they've gone back to the Bob Clampett, the early Chuck Jones. But also, they're recording them with a full, huge orchestra on the recording stage. Warner Brothers still has one of the greatest recording stages on the lot in Burbank. And this is the same stage that these cartoons were originally recorded on when they were done. So it has the same...
So much history.
When a piece of wood goes bad on the floor, they replace it with the exact same kind of wood from the same exact tree that was right next to the other tree that, you know, where the wood came from before. So they still take the music so seriously. And we have three 3D cartoons, Wile E. Coyote cartoons, Fur a Flying, Rabid Rider, and Coyote Falls, that have gorgeous new full orchestra scores that were composed by the wonderful Hollywood composer Christopher Lynyrd, who is like a John Williams in the making right now. So the music is still really important. And here's the secret. When the music is bad and not engaging, and it's made by a bunch of digital imitation instruments and stuff, people don't listen to it, and they're not interested in it. When the music is fantastic and is played by live musicians in a live orchestra, you cannot help but love it. No matter what your background is, you cannot help but love it. And so everything that David, my partner, and I, and our producer, Amy Minter, who works with us, everything we try to do is to get people into a concert hall so they can hear a live orchestra. And I think all of these other film concerts do the same thing. When a Star Wars concert or a Harry Potter concert sells out to a bunch of millennials who never would even think about going to a symphony orchestra concert, some of them come back to hear Brahms and Tchaikovsky and Mahler. A lot of them do.
Yeah, they enjoy the experience.
Yeah, right. You can't help but be taken in by it.
George Doherty is the conductor at the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra. They are on stage for the Bugs Bunny at the Symphony, the 30th anniversary edition, which two shows on Saturday night at Symphony Center right here on Michigan Avenue. You can find the tickets for, and it's going to be Bugs Bunny and the whole crew projected live, and you can watch the cartoon while the symphony plays along. It's 3 o'clock and 7:30 on Saturday. George, a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
It's been an incredible pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's all, folks.